Hello and welcome to our micronutrients presentation on the mineral sodium. And today's presentation is going to go into detail about the value of sodium and what to look for if you're looking for deficiencies or excesses of sodium in a person's diet. So before we begin, we're going to say that this presentation is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified medical practitioner, and it's not medical care, it's education. And it's education from me to you, and whatever you might choose to do for yourself and put into action, just make sure that you've researched it and you've made the right decision, and in conjunction with a doctor if you're under their care. But that's an important piece also for you to be saying to your clients, your patients each time, is that you're giving them information and no guarantees, promises, representation, warranties of any kind are to be had, and it's not medical advice. So let's go ahead and get started. So let's start with some general sodium information. Sodium, like the rest of our minerals, are found on the periodic table, and this is the symbol from the periodic table. It's an essential macro mineral, meaning we need it in fairly large quantities, not quite as large as most people take in, however, because excess sodium is actually more of a problem than deficient sodium. It's considered an electrolyte, and we're going to take a look at what exactly that means to be an electrolyte in a moment. It contributes to the maintenance of the concentration and charge differences across membranes. And you're going to hear the term a lot, concentration gradient or ionic gradient. And that's what this is responsible for, and we'll show you some of that as well. It's the most abundant cation in the body. There's cations and anions. Cations are positive. They have a positive charge. So sodium generally has a positive charge. It's about 93% of all the positively charged ions in the body is sodium. It has a single charge as opposed to two electrical charges that most of the other minerals have, which means that it's more loosely holding on to things, so it moves readily through solutions and through water. And it's a very important part of the movement across membranes through something called the ATPase pump. So let's look at what it means for sodium to be an electrolyte. Like I said, it's a cation, and a cation is a positively charged ion. An electrolyte is actually a salt or an ion that's electrically charged, and it moves to either a positive or negative electrode. So the negative is called the cathode, and the positive is called the anode. So the cathode will attract the cations. So the cations are positive, they're attracted to the negative cathode, and the opposite for the anions, which are attracted to the positive anodes because they're negative. So they move to, ions that move to the cathode are positively charged, and the ones that move to the anode are negatively charged. And the most common electrolytes, the main electrolytes in our body, are sodium chloride, magnesium, calcium, and potassium. And we're going to be looking at three of those today. So let's take a look at what sodium and the effect that sodium has on a membrane, what's called the membrane potential. And it maintains the membrane potential via something called the sodium potassium ATPase pumps. It pumps sodium out of the cell and it pumps potassium into the cell. The ATPase means it's an enzyme related to ATP, and it uses energy to pump it. It's not a passive activity. It's definitely one that requires energy in the form of ATP. The activity of this sodium potassium pump accounts for 20 to 40% of the energy expended by a typical adult. And that's huge. Just think about that. 20 to 40% of all the energy you expend is in operating this sodium potassium ATPase pump. That says that it's a critical component of you staying in health and your clients staying in health. It's very important that the membrane potentials be maintained for many things, including nerve impulses, transmission from one nerve to the next along the synapses and the axons of the nerve, muscle contraction, and that's not just the skeletal muscle contraction, but also smooth muscle contraction in the organs, like in the intestinal tract, and also cardiac muscle contraction. Important for cardiac function. It's important for the function of the stomach and important for the nerves themselves, not just the nerve impulse contraction. There's a small picture of it, but I'll show you an enlarged picture of it here. So you can see that basically these little green kidney bean looking things are sitting in this cell membrane and they're opening up. And when they open up, the calcium goes inside of the bean when we're going from outside to inside. And then the potassium shoots out and into the space. The ATP is used in order to facilitate this. That closes and then it opens up on the inside of the cell and allows the sodium to pop out and the calcium to come in. So that's what this pump looks like. Very important, obviously, since it takes up about 20 to 40% of everything that's happening energy-wise in the body. So let's take a look at some of the functions of sodium. Well, it maintains proper water balance. And you probably already know that one of the side effects or one of the symptoms of excess sodium in the body is the retention of fluid. We hold on to too much fluid when we have too much sodium because the sodium attracts the water. And some of the symptoms we'll look at later include edema, swelling. It maintains the blood pH. You know, we have to maintain the blood pH pretty neutral, a little bit more on the alkaline side, like 7.35 to 7.45. Sodium is part of that, and the other electrolytes are part of that as well. It's involved in acid-base balance, not just in the blood, but throughout the body and in the tissues, so the urine pH, the saliva pH, etc. It's the main cation. Remember, a cation is a positively charged ion in the extracellular space. Okay, so there's a lot of it there in the extracellular space. It's needed by all the organs, including the liver, the brain, and the spleen. It's needed for lubrication of synovial membranes like joints and cartilage and ligaments. It's useful in neutralizing acidic byproducts of metabolism, typical stuff like lactic acid, butyric acid, acetic acid, and also fatty acids, which are acidic. And when saturated fats or meats are metabolized, this is important. So this is what it looks like inside the intestine when we're trying to get sodium absorbed. It's really highly absorbed. 95 to 100% is absorbed by the body, and whatever's left over is excreted in the feces. There's three major absorption pathways in the intestine. I don't expect you to remember these, but it's just good to know that absorption happens in multiple ways, and especially if you're trying to figure out if something's going wrong. It's always good to have at least a somewhat familiarity of the pathways that you can look them up and see if you can figure out if something's not going right when you're working with a client. So there's something called the sodium glucose co-transport system. So sodium and glucose are transported together. This is something that happens throughout the small intestine, so the jejunum, the duodenum, the ileum, and it involves a carrier that sits in the brush border inside those cells. And you'll see that on this picture, you'll see the carrier pointed out here, the sodium glucose amino acids. The electroneutral sodium and chloride co-transport system basically co-transports sodium and chloride. It happens in the small intestine and also in the large intestine. And then there's something called the electrogenic sodium transport system, which is the main way that it gets absorbed in the large intestine. And this is what it looks like up close. So at the top, you've got the lumen of the small intestine. The bumps are the villi. And then there's the space in between. Those are the microvilli, and the big ones, the big cells, are the epithelial cells. And you've got water going from the lumen into the cells via osmosis. And then you've got, in the middle, you've got the sodium glucose transport. So they go together. They come together through that carrier. And then you've got the other thing showing in here is water going into the bloodstream by osmosis, potassium passing through a potassium channel, And then this sodium potassium ATP ice pump, which is pumping the sodium into the bloodstream. And then the glucose just passes through a transport protein. Sodium, there's not much sodium stored in the body, more so than some of the other electrolytes and minerals, though. About 30% is stored on the surface of the bone crystals, and the rest of it is stored in the extracellular fluid, the nerve, and the muscle tissue. So while there's not a lot of extra sodium floating around, and it's something that we need to be taking in on a daily basis, there's certainly a fair amount that's around in the bone mostly, and then also in the nerves and the muscles tissues. What about sodium and interacting with other nutrients? Well, sodium interacts with calcium in that excess sodium can deplete calcium and cause the urinary loss of calcium. So what does that mean realistically? You've got a patient who's saying that she just got diagnosed with osteopenia or osteoporosis, and she's taking a calcium supplement, but she's still got osteoporosis. So you start to ask her about your diet, her diet, and you find out that she salts everything, and she loves to eat chips and popcorn and eats a fair amount of salt. That excess sodium that she's taking in is going to increase the loss of calcium and can weaken her bones. So sodium also interacts with potassium. So excess sodium increases potassium excretion, and excess potassium increases sodium excretion. So they're trying to stay in equilibrium. So it's important that there's a balance. So if you've got too much sodium, it's going to increase the potassium excretion so that they maintain. And too much potassium will increase the sodium excretion. Most people err on the side of too much sodium as opposed to too much potassium. So, you know, because they're salting their food, they're eating a lot of processed foods that have a lot of sodium. So you run the risk of low potassium. And when we look at our potassium presentation, you'll look and see some of the symptoms of low potassium, which actually in some cases mimic symptoms of low magnesium. So that's some of the nutrient interactions that we have with sodium. Let's look at the sodium-potassium balance. So potassium concentration is higher on the inside of the cell. It's an intracellular electrolyte. Sodium concentration is higher on the outside of the cell. So it's an extracellular electrolyte. And it's a delicate balance that's needed for good cellular health. Too much of one is going to throw the equilibrium off. We need to have the charges to be maintained. So one's positive, right? One's negative, and we need to have an equilibrium happening there. If we have too much sodium, so somebody's eating a lot of processed food without simultaneously increasing their potassium, whether it be focusing on high potassium foods or taking a potassium supplement, then they're going to get into trouble. The ideal is to caution your clients and your patients to stay away from all that extra sodium that's packed into the processed food. And if they aren't doing that right away or as quickly as you think they should, get them on a potassium supplement or high potassium foods in order to balance that out. So sodium deficiency is not real common, but it does happen, and it usually happens as an acute sodium deficiency, not a long-term chronic. Usually happens like an excessive sweating. So somebody's out there in the desert and they're walking around and they're sweating up a storm, or they're doing really prolonged endurance exercise like running half marathons and marathons, or some of those ultra marathons or triathlons, and not staying hydrated and replenishing electrolytes while they do so. Vomiting can cause a sodium deficiency because you're going to lose a lot of it in the vomit. Diuretics are basically other name for them, or water pills they call them, but they're basically, they increase the excretion of water that will also increase the excretion of sodium. And sometimes it's usually done deliberately, either because somebody's trying to lose weight and they think that losing their water weight is going to really do much good, but also when somebody has high blood pressure and the doctor may put them on a diuretic. So you got to be really careful about sodium deficiency, but also potassium deficiency as well. And then sometimes there's a hormone called antidiuretic hormone, and it controls the excretion of fluids. And there's sometimes a syndrome of inappropriate antidiuretic hormone, which can create a deficiency of sodium as well as potassium. So what kind of things can happen in sodium deficiency? And another word you might see for sodium deficiency is hyponatremia. So things that you might see, abdominal cramping, anorexia, confusion, dehydration, depression, dizziness, low blood pressure, memory impairment, muscular weakness, flatulence, hallucinations, heart palpitations, impaired sense of taste, nausea and vomiting, poor coordination, recurrent infections, headache, fatigue, lethargy, seizures, and weight loss. Phew, right? That's a lot of symptoms. And it doesn't mean that if your client has one of these symptoms that they might be sodium deficient. You're going to put the puzzle piece together. You're going to look at some of those predisposing causes, like had they just been sick and were vomiting or had diarrhea? Did they just come off running some sort of an intense marathon or ultra marathon or some sort of an endurance exercise, or just come back from hanging out in the desert and camping and sweating a lot? So you're going to look at that, those predisposing factors, in addition to some of these symptoms. Like I said, usually this is acute. You might see this in somebody gets dehydrated when they're in the middle of doing some sort of race and they're getting all disoriented and they're dizzy and they're nauseous and they're just feeling really bad. If ever you're feeling that way, I've had this happen to me. I attributed it to dehydration, but it's probably a combination of sodium deficiency and dehydration. We were hiking at a very high elevation, and I had forgotten to bring extra water with me, and I usually would bring my water with me. We were out there for a long time. We climbed really high, and I was really thirsty, and I started getting really dizzy and kind of nauseous and just felt really out of it until I could get some water in me. And sometimes it's not enough to just put water in, right? Because if you just put water in and they're already sodium deficient, you're going to make them even appear to be more sodium deficient. So adding some electrolytes, adding a little bit of celery juice. One of the things I did once when my son was really little and he ate something we later found out he was allergic to, and he was vomiting all over the place. And he was a little tiny thing. He was, you know, maybe 5 or 6 months old. And he had vomited a lot. So what I did was I made some celery juice, and I put juice of plum in there for a little bit of the sugars, and I just fed it to him, you know, very slowly, little spoonfuls, and that brought him back really quickly, very quickly. So, you know, you can look at things like that, like put a little salt in someone's water, put a little kelp, put a little celery juice, get them to drink some celery juice to try to pull out of this. So here's the adequate intake of sodium. Most people, like I said, get way too much sodium. It's real easy to do, but there's a certain minimum that you don't want people to go down below. And you can see it greatly increases as people age. Little infants only need, like, you know, a 0.12 grams, you know, and then as they go to 6, 7 to 10 months old, they go to 0.37 grams. But by the time they're a year old, they're needing a gram all the way up to a gram and a half for pregnant and breastfeeding. Okay. Most people, most Americans are getting 3 and 4 grams or more. So if you started to really look at the sodium content of what people are eating, most people are getting way, way too much because they're salting their food and they're eating a lot of processed type foods. There's a maximum amount of sodium that's recommended as well. So while the minimum is around 1.2 grams, we're really looking at no more than 2.3 grams or 2,300 milligrams, which amounts to about a teaspoon. So that's not all that much if you think about some of the ways that you could be getting sodium and salt. And it's really worth it to teach people to be aware of all the extra sodium that they're taking in. According to the Institute of Medicine, the maximum daily amount for each of these age groups goes from 1,500 for 1 to 3 years old, 1,900 for 4 to 8, 2,200 for 9 to 13, and 2,300 adult. If a person's sodium sensitive, meaning that even small amounts of extra sodium cause their blood pressure to go up, it's recommended that they max out at about 1,500. There's certain populations that are more sensitive to sodium than others. Adults over the age of 50 get much more sensitive to it and have to watch it in terms of blood pressure. Blacks, for some reason, tend to be more sodium sensitive. Anybody already diagnosed with hypertension, you want them to be careful and watch out that the sodium doesn't rise it. Diabetics, and also those with kidney disease because they can't excrete it and recycle it. So symptoms of excess sodium, I think you'll recognize this. You see the ankles go from, you know, a nice skinny little ankle and it blows up. And there's edema. There's also high blood pressure, you know, and you know, they say it's just insensitive people, but anybody who has a lot of extra sodium can cause high blood pressure. But some people are more sensitive than others. Not enough potassium. So if you do a blood test and you see that they have not enough potassium, it could be from too much sodium. Liver disease, kidney disease, bone weakness and osteoporosis, stupor and coma. All of these are possible symptoms of having too much sodium. So it's a good idea to be aware of that, especially in your older populations. And when you do a drug history and you ask them what they're sensitive to, what drugs they're or what medications they're on, or if they have any hypertension or any diagnosed conditions, then you're going to be on more of an alert to be looking for those symptoms and making sure that they're not on too much sodium. Like I said, it's super easy to get too much sodium. So these are just food sources. On the picture, there's a sodium-rich fruit list, and then there's a sodium-rich vegetable. So we see apples and avocados and mangoes and papayas and pineapple and bananas. Okay, those are all good sources. The vegetables include carrots and radishes and red bell pepper and tomato and broccoli and cabbage and cucumbers. All of these things are good sources of sodium, naturally sodium rich, so you don't need to really salt. And sometimes you can juice some of these things or make a sauce with some of these things that can go over your food to break you away from over salting your food. Not to say that a lot of people don't need the sodium because, you know, for adrenal fatigue, for example, you're going to be excreting a lot of it. So here are some of the food sources, the most common food sources, kelp and stinging nettle and olives and dulse and sauerkraut and Irish moss and Chinese cabbage, mustard cabbage, lettuce, turnip, spinach, carrots, watercress, dandelion greens, tomatoes, radish roots, celery, scallop, lobster, beet greens, and beets. So all of these are good sources of sodium. So like I said, I don't think you're going to have to worry about people getting enough sodium. It's usually where you're going to be concerned is that they get too much sodium. So there's some other more of the combination. Mostly these are the processed foods, but it's there. The chart is there to compare. Like an apple has 1 milligram of sodium. So that's about a thousandth of what we, you know, looking at as far as the lower limit. A 16-ounce soda has 19, but look at the cheeseburger on the left, 1,190 milligrams. That's your quota pretty much for the day in that quarter-pound cheeseburger. Look at the cup of potato chips, and think about it. A cup of potato chips isn't that much. Most people eat way more than that. It's got quite a substantial heavy-duty load. The soup, this is not saying your homemade soup, this is saying like the cup of soup you might buy at the grocery store, 930 milligrams of sodium. So you can see that there's a lot of stuff here that is really high. You take a salad that's 44 milligrams per cup, and then you add 2 tablespoons of a commercial salad dressing, and you're up to 438. So it is easy to get too much sodium, and so you'll want to monitor people, especially if they have a history of hypertension or a family history of hypertension. So some condiments that are high in sodium, well, obviously the sea vegetables, kelp and dulse. Celery seed, you can get actual celery seed and grind it up and put it on your salads and in stuff. That's a source of sodium. Sesame seed, turmeric, dill, cumin, and nettle. Well, like I said, no, you're not going to be worried too much about people not getting enough, but as you take them off of the processed foods and get them onto more whole foods, it's good to know what they need, especially if they're suffering from any kind of adrenal fatigue. So there's a lot of medications that will deplete sodium. Anything that causes an increase of fluid outflow from the body, so diuretics, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, those would be your Motrin and ibuprofen and things like that. Any kind of opiate derivatives, morphine, cocaine, etc. SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors used for depression, phenothiazines, and then tricyclic antidepressants. These are all drugs, classes of drugs that deplete sodium. And underneath each of these classes is a whole bunch of drugs that actually do deplete. So when you see somebody and you suspect low sodium symptoms, it's generally not going to be from lack of dietary sodium. It's more going to be from diuretics that deplete the sodium or some sort of medication that depletes the sodium, or that they've been under, they've been vomiting or sweating extensively. These are more, these aren't the classes, but these are other kinds, chlorpromidine, cyclophosphamide, desmopressin, it's a nasal or oral form, clofibrate, oxytocin, and vincristine. Oxytocin is a synthetic form of, or pitocin is a synthetic form of oxytocin, and oxytocin is now being used and recommended to people as usually like a nasal kind of application for that feeling of, connection and love and bonding. It's what the body produces when mama's in childbirth, pitocin, that causes the uterine to contract to help baby come out into the world. So how do you look to see if somebody has enough or too much sodium? Well, you look at their serum level. That's accurate. 135 to 140 is the optimal range. The range that the labs allow is a little bit on either side of that. You also can't just look at the sodium. You have to look at the sodium in relationship with potassium and chloride because they run together, and you need to keep them in balance. You can have them do a diet journal and see how much processed food they're eating, or if they are someone who has been salt phobic and isn't using any high sodium foods, and they may be suffering from a deficiency. And then taking a good history. Taking a good history is true of everything, right? We really want to be able to take a good history and see what's going on, what kind of symptoms they might have had, what kind of past situations that could be either depleting or causing excess and throwing their electrolytes out of balance. So that's it for sodium. I have some references. Our textbook has a good chapter on sodium if you want to read that, Advanced Nutrition and Human Metabolism. The Linus Pauling Institute has a pretty good a write-up on it. And then there's two others that I put down there that are just very specific things about sodium in the body. So thank you for being here, and we'll see you on the next nutrient.